The construction cranes are back on our skylines, and the hammers have returned to our neighborhoods. Real estate in South Florida has staged a remarkable rebound from the dark days just a few years ago. Foreign investors, hedge funds, and bargain hunters have all snapped up homes and condominiums, oftentimes spending cash. But thousands remain underwater with their homes, owing more money on their mortgages than their homes are currently worth. I'm Tom Hudson. Coming up on the Sunshine Economy, the real deal with real estate in South Florida. Has the housing rebound happened too fast? Two cultural institutions have undertaken high-profile developments, and a big boxy building on the bayfront sits empty for the first time in 50 years. That's ahead on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Ask homeowners in South Florida about how they feel about the ups and downs of the local housing market, and you get a range of responses.
What I feel is rather foolish for having watched it unfold without recognizing it.
Yeah, I'm kind of pissed because I had to take Social Security early to make ends meet.
Debbie from Kendall, Steve from Miami there, just two of thousands of homeowners in South Florida who followed the American dream of buying their own home, only to see the value of that home plummet. But prices are rising again. Real estate developers are back. This is the Sunshine Economy, the real deal on real estate in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Welcome in to another program here at the Real Estate, the Real Deal here in South Florida on the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. The conversation already started online at WLRN.org and on Twitter. The handle is at WLRN. Use the hashtag the Sunshine Economy. Real estate in South Florida, of course, is a full contact sport. We all know it. It's one of the founding industries of our region as well. It's generated enormous amounts of wealth for some, and let's face it, lately it's been bad investments for others. 6 years, though, now after the real estate market went bust, it is back in a big, big way. Over the past year, construction has added jobs at a faster clip than any other industry in our region. And while it's tough to complain about putting people back to work, there are still lots of neighbors who are stuck. They're stuck living in homes they paid a lot of money for, maybe too much money as it turns out. Debbie from Kendall paid more than $250,000 for her home back in 2007. She figures it may be worth $150,000 today.
It's so tempting to do what I know other people are doing, to just walk away, let the bank have it, and go find some place to rent that isn't costly. I'll have money put aside since the house is no longer a good investment and it's no longer appreciated.
What has tempted Debbie is exactly what Steve in Miami has done with his mortgage. He quit paying his mortgage in January. Now, in the business, that's called a strategic default. For Steve, the strategy came after several years of trying to keep up.
It's become too much of a drain. My income went down dramatically. I've dipped into savings for 5 years. You know, it had this drop in Miami not been so bad, I would have been okay. I mean, I was prepared to weather the storm for 2 or 3 years, but what are we now? We're ending year five. I can't weather the storm anymore. I went through probably $80,000 worth of savings, on top of my income to pay my mortgage.
You can hear the frustration there and disappointment in Steve's voice. Steve and Debbie's stories, though, they're not uncommon in our region. Florida is still home to the highest number of home foreclosures in the nation. It's almost three times higher than the national average. Seven of the top 10 U.S. cities with the highest foreclosure rates are right here in the Sunshine State. And consider this, Miami has the highest foreclosure rate of any large city in America. So it's been a nightmare for those homeowners like Debbie and Steve, but still plenty of people, more and more people seemingly every day, still want the fairy tale of buying a home, even as this market heats up considerably. The Miami Herald's Karen Burkett reports.
Once upon a time, 2 years ago, I met Ashley Ahrens, a young maiden, really an attorney, who was hoping to buy her first castle, really a condo. She was all set to decorate. She even had the color palette in her head.
Light blue, dark browns, in like khaki, beachy, sandy colors.
Aaron's came to the market pre-approved and with a strong credit rating. But she couldn't seem to beat those evil stepsisters, the cash buyers. Property values weren't appraising even close to their asking prices. Today, though, the numbers are working in her favor.
Same building that a year ago, a higher unit, about the same size, didn't appraise for more than 130. Same building, lower floor, now appraises for 180. Simply because the market caught up with itself.
Aaron's worked with her fairy godmother, a Coldwell Banker realtor named Elizabeth Cooper Garcia. In the last year and a half, Garcia said she put in 18 to 20 offers on her client's behalf. Then finally, a magic spell. The pair caught a break.
It was the building she had liked. She had put an offer there the year before. And when we got there, I literally had to accost the realtor. I told him, you're not going anywhere. I had Ashley stay at the apartment. I went downstairs to my car, brought the paperwork up, and I literally wrote out the contract on the counter of the kitchen. Full price. I told him to leave, not to show it anymore, which, of course, he laughed. I begged him to please. You know, I gave him the story that we've been waiting for a long time, and he said he would see what he could do. And 2 days later, we were sweating it out, but we did finally get it accepted.
Erin still doesn't quite describe herself as a homeowner yet.
I have a closing date for the end of this month. So, yes, I guess is the closest as close as you can be without being an actual homeowner. So, yes.
Congratulations. Tell me about your place. Describe it.
Well, it's a one-bedroom, one-bath corner unit, yay, along the Coral Way corridor. Not quite exactly where I wanted to be, but I was pretty much priced out of there. So, took something that's kind of between the office and the courthouse.
What does it mean to you to have your first home now?
It sounds very, very silly. The home ownership thing is very much a, oh, okay, I'm a grown up now. And it also, you know, it's an investment. But the rental market's through the roof. So
financially, it actually is a good decision for you because you're saying you were paying a really high rent.
The unit that I'm buying right now, I'll probably at the end of the day be making payments for principal, interest, taxes, and insurance of about $1,200. That same unit probably rents for $1,350, $1,400. 5 years down the line, if I want to go buy a house, that's just money in my pocket.
How much did you pay for the property?
Contract price is $185,000. It appraised out to $180,000. Thankfully, I had enough cash to make up that $5,000 difference from what the bank is going to lend to me.
Ashley's closing day is May 31st. And so this fairy tale ends with the maiden, the attorney, purchasing her first castle, a one-bedroom, one-bathroom condo along Coral Way. We wish that she lives happily ever after. For the Sunshine Economy, I'm Karen Burkett, reporting from the WLRN Miami Herald Studios.
Still ahead on the Sunshine Economy, how a longtime banker has been surprised by the housing rebound.
We're at least impressed, if not amazed, at how quickly this thing has turned around.
It's The Real Deal on Real Estate in South Florida here on the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. The conversation online at WLRN.org, on Twitter at WLRN with the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Ron Shuffield joins us now. He is the president and CEO of EWM Realtors. And Carlos Rosso is president of condominium development for the Related Group. A couple of guys that know the South Florida market very, very well. Ron, as we listen to Ashley's story, in 5 years, is it going to be a fairy tale still for her if she still owns her condominium, or could it be a nightmare?
Well, I predict she sells that condo and moves to Brickell, where she was headed in the beginning. Obviously, we're encouraging all of our first-time buyers, especially, to go ahead and jump into something today that will help them to begin appreciating value, gaining value, so then they can make a move in a few years to something even bigger.
But how long should they stay in that home? How long do they need to think about staying in that home? And is it an investment or a home first?
Well, I think it's always a home first. And as she said, you know, in her case, she said she feels like she's now grown up. She owns her own home. But I think about 3 years is what I tell most of our buyers. If they can have a three-year look into the future, you know, if they're thinking they're going to be there for a year and then sell, I mean, a lot of expenses to buy and sell in that short period of time, But I think in a three-year period with what we're experiencing right now, you know, she should see some nice gains.
Carlos, you may be looking at a condominium in 3 years that your company is building right now with the related companies. What do you anticipate this market to look like in 3 years?
I think that in 3 years, we're going to see the American buyer coming more and more into the market. Right now, it's dominated by cash foreign buyers. But in 3 years from now, with our projects being completed, we are going to see more and more of cases like Ashley buying from an original buyer that bought in Brickell.
A lot of folks will look back at what happened in 2006 and 2007 as clearly a reaction to the Great Recession that the economy nationwide and worldwide was hit with, but also a significant oversupply of condominiums here in the South Florida, especially the Miami market. You're starting construction on the Beach Walk, 30 stories in Hollandale Beach. You've got a project in Edgewater, 40-story Icon Bay, 22-story building in Hollywood's almost done, 42-story in Brickell. You've got a 27-story My Brickell this fall. Is there too much supply now that's under construction, even on the part of the related companies?
On the related side, on our company side, we've diversified ourselves. We are doing right now approximately 2,500 condominiums, another 3,000 rental units, and close to 4,000 affordable housing units. Mm. On the condominium side, what we see right now is that during this last crash, a lot of what we call dentist developers, people that were never really developers, have disappeared from the marketplace. So the market has become, I would say, more grown up. Buyers who are putting large sums of cash, you know, are real buyers. We've sort of tried to discourage the flippers. And the only way that we found out on doing that was by asking big deposits. So we see a lot less development than there was in the previous cycle. It still has come up, you know, with force and really surprised us, you know. But we don't think that there is enough. And brokers would tell you that there is no inventory to sell. So
yeah. Let's talk about that, because inventory is the supply of homes and condominiums available for this market, Ron. And Carlos just talked about almost 10,000 units, both for sale condominiums, homes, affordable units, and rental units that the related companies has in the pipeline. Inventories are at really multi-year lows. Is that impacting pricing in a very significant way, in a sustainable way?
Yes, Tom, the number one metric in our business is the number of months of supply. You don't even need to know what city you're talking about, but if you can tell me how many months of supply we have, I can tell you whether prices are going up or down. We need to have 6 to 9 months of supply, and we're currently hovering around 3.5 to 5 in both Broward and Dade County. So, you know, when the inventories get down that low, then the prices definitely start going up. You know, we're seeing right now about a 2% increase per month in the median price of a home and a condo in Miami and Fort Lauderdale.
Now, think about that, right, guys? I mean, if you have cash in a savings account, you're getting much less than 1% return annually.
Yes.
Now you're talking about putting a significant amount of cash into a home, and at these price increases we're seeing, Ron, 2% per month increase.
Yes. You know, the homes and the condos that had devalued so dramatically back in the 2009 period and 2010, many people who bought, especially in Brickell, bought buildings that were 5 years old in 2009, you know, have seen their investment double in value just in these last 4 years.
Yeah. We're seeing year-over-year price increases on condominiums, Carlos, of 20%, 25% plus. Is that kind of price action, is that kind of price increase something that today's buyer ought to continue to expect?
Let's say the exact number of how condominiums increase or not increase, you know, it's second to us. Right now, what we're really looking at are for really strong markets, and we think that the Brickell market is really going to become that 24-hour city that we envisioned when we started with our first condominiums in downtown and in Brickell with One Miami in 2001. Brickell City Center is going to have a huge impact on mm-hmm. Brickell. And it's a very interesting cycle, because in the last cycle, it was really all about the residential side. On this cycle, there have been big shifts on the commercial side and on the retail side. So you're seeing the owners, for example, of Bal Harbour moving and partnering up with Brickell City Center and bringing brands to Brickell that never existed before. You're seeing the Design District opening up. We're seeing a new branch of the Aventura Mall being developed. So all that retail activity also will spur development around it. it. And it's a very, very interesting moment in the cycle.
You're also developing, though, in Broward. You've got the Hollandale Beach construction beginning on Beachwalk, as I mentioned, 30 stories there. You know, what are you seeing in Broward County with, again, inventories are still at multi-year lows. Is it sustainable in Broward and go further north up into Palm Beach? Is it beginning to take root there?
The Latin buyer really prefers Miami-Dade right now.
And
you
that's
know,
what's driving the Dade County.
That's what's
price.
Driving the Dade County. And it's very interesting. You know, I was just reading an article actually during this weekend in the New York Times, and it says how really from all perspectives, you know, real estate is a comparable business. So in the high end of the condominium market, a buyer compares the prices of London to the prices of New York, and the prices of New York to the prices of South Beach, and then the prices of South Beach get compared to the prices of Brickell.
Sure, so, but what about that ripple effect, the trickle down effect? What about the Miamian or somebody who's been living in Weston for 10 years, 15 years, for instance, bought their home, you know, in 2003 or even in 2006, like we heard from Steve in North Miami, that is underwater, owes more on their mortgage. What's the trickle-down effect? The high end of the market is going to take care of itself. But what about where the mere mortals here in South Florida live?
I think that the mere mortals have a great opportunity, with interest being at 3.5%, to refinance those mortgages as low as possible and to try to get out of the mess that they were in the first place. At the same time, for new buyers, it's a great opportunity, you know, to jump into the market at this low interest rates with inventory really dwindling down.
Ron, we began by talking about how this market looks in 3 years. Do we see double-digit price increases continuing even for 3 years now?
I don't think so. You know, we're trying to rebalance. The market is rebalancing itself now from an overreaction to the 2009 drop. You know, we dropped prices from a Friday to a Monday in the spring of 2009 by 50%. I mean, literally, properties that were selling for $400 a square foot on Friday became $200 a square foot on Monday. You know, the financial communities, the lenders and the developers during that period slashed prices. And now we're just trying to rebuild where we should be today based on today's construction costs.
Well, we know the bum and the boost, the build and the bust cycles of South Florida, Carlos. Are we in the beginnings of another bubble?
I think as long as we continue asking for big deposits and big cash deposits, you know, the market is going to sustain itself. People are not going to buy things that are overpriced, and eventually there are going to be projects that are going to slow down. But I don't think we're going to have the bust that we had in the past, because there's a lot of investment, genuine investment, going into these pre-construction projects. So it's a different cycle.
Ron, how about it?
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, when you look at the world markets, Miami now has joined, you know, the world centers, global centers, for especially our high-end buyers looking for properties here. So when you compare our prices with even New York, I mean, you can buy literally four of our downtown condominiums that Carlos is building for the price of one in New York City.
All right, we got to leave it there with Ron Shuffield, President and CEO, EWM Realtors. Carlos Rosso, President of Condominium Development with The Related Group, talking about the real deal on real estate in South Florida here on the Sunshine Economy. Still to come, touring two multi-million dollar real estate developments whose owners are not in it for the money. This is the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN, the real deal on real estate in South Florida. Conversation ongoing online at WLRN.org, on Twitter with the handle at WLRN and the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Lots of folks chiming in whether or not this is a bubble or not, how much new REO or foreclosed upon real estate could impact pricing in the future, and whether or not this is sustainable, this boom and the bust cycle that we've seen here in South Florida so often. Martha Brannigan writes about it in the Monday Business Herald for the Miami Herald. She joins us now. Cupcakes, snacks, and crowded side streets are what you're experiencing when you go to open houses in some locations, Martha. What are you experiencing? What are your sources telling you about the sustainability of this? Everybody wants to get in, but what are we getting in for?
Well, what we're really seeing is the buyers are just coming out in droves, and that's driven by a number of things. They're seeing that real estate is a safe area to get into again. For a number of years, people just didn't want to have anything to do with it. They'd much rather rent. But now they feel like the bottom has been reached several years ago, and now they see prices ticking up month by month, and they want to get a piece of the action while they still can. Helping that is interest rates are so very low that it's extremely cheap money. People are able to buy things now with the low interest rates that they won't be able to buy once the Federal Reserve starts dialing back on their stimulus. So it's kind of an opportunity. At the same time, there's just nothing out there to buy, so that's really fueling prices. They're driving them up really, really quickly.
You paint this picture in the piece that was published this morning in the Monday Business Herald with a snack truck at an open house. A snack truck at an open house. Only in South Florida would you experience something like that. So when you get this environment of cheap money for those that can borrow it, you also get a lot of cash buyers from international. You get low demand. Are we using the same kind of language with real estate that we used in 2004 and 2005?
Well, a lot of it's similar in the sort of the frenzy. There are multiple contracts coming in on properties. There are bidding wars where people are sort of bidding over the asking price. They're passing aside the appraisals and just saying, I don't care what the appraisal is. I'll pay the difference. I just want to get this house. The big difference is the financing of it is dramatically different. Whereas back in 2005, 2006, people were getting liar loans and loans that were just 3% down or basically the entire thing financed. Today's pretty much all of the loans, most of the loans, are very high levels of equity. And about 60% of the deals in Miami-Dade County are actually cash deals. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of foreign buyers coming in, a lot of investors coming in, just plunking down cash. So the leverage is completely different. The financing of it is quite different than back in the boom days.
We heard a lot of excitement about the building out of Brickell Village, the excitement of the Bayfront, the shore, Hollandale Beach, Fort Lauderdale, Palm Beach is beginning to see some action now. But what about in the kind of the western suburbs, as we can kind of lump them all in together? Again, kind of working Miamians, working South Floridians that are seeing their median home prices, published home prices, go up every month, but still may not feel secure in the value of their own home.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head, because actually the recovery has been driven largely along the coastal areas and in the urban core. That's where people have wanted to live. That's the more desirable areas. Certainly the beaches are very, very attractive. The western areas and more southern areas of the county, the suburbs, have sort of lingered much longer. But now even those are picking up, and you're starting to see some recovery, more recovery in those areas. And it's sort of a generalized recovery now.
And then also, you know, for folks who are trying to move within their communities, one of the big challenges that we've had in the real estate industry here in South Florida for the past 5 or 6 years are folks that are underwater on their mortgages and are unable to move within the local community, let alone take advantage of maybe some employment opportunities that may present themselves from elsewhere. Are we beginning to see a little bit of loosening up in that regard?
Some at the worst, at the darkest hour of the real estate crash, there were more than 50% of the mortgaged homes in Miami-Dade and Broward County were underwater. That was equity completely wiped out and owing money, so that people would have to actually go to a closing table and bring cash with them. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to do that. So now it's down to about 4 out of 10 mortgaged homes. So it's really still quite a high level of homes that are still underwater. The level is, of course, as home prices keep ticking up by double digits year over year, people are getting more equity. But there's still a lot of people who we've talked to, a lot of people that would like to move, but they just can't move because they're kind of stuck.
Are we creating kind of a dual housing market, the high end of the shore luxury market of 6, 7, 8 figures, for instance, and then again a market that maybe off the shore, more inland, that's more filled with neighborhoods and homes that are filled with underwater homeowners and foreclosed homes?
I think there really is a divergence in Miami between the wealthy and the poor, and not even the poor, but just the average person.
Sure, working class.
Exactly. And that's become much more dramatized with the construction of these sort of eight-figure huge, you know, these condominiums that have private elevators that will take the people to their swanky units that are like 8,000 square feet. And then on the other hand, you have people who are sort of doubling up in houses, or kids moving back in with their parents after college, because housing costs in South Florida are not cheap. At the crash, they were getting down there, but relative to income levels in Miami and in Broward, housing is not a cheap proposition for most people.
We heard a lot about Brickell again from Ron Shuffield of EWM and from Carlos Russo of the related companies. What about that next neighborhood? We always got to look forward here in Miami. We're always looking to the future in South Florida. What about the next hot neighborhood? Is it Edgewater that's north of downtown?
Well, Edgewater's seeing a huge renaissance. It was actually started in the last boom, and then when things turned south, everything came to a halt there. But now with all the construction in Brickell, they're running out of sites downtown and along Brickell Avenue. There's just no room to build unless you buy a very expensive property and tear it down. So mm-hmm. the to find bayfront property, you have to move north, and Edgewater is a very attractive neighborhood for the developers. It also has zoning that makes it very very easy for high-rise construction. And it's wedged in right between Wynwood, the Arts District, and the Design District on the north, which is getting all these swanky shops coming in. So it's a very up and coming area.
With her eye on the future of real estate in South Florida, Martha Brannigan writes about it in the Monday Business Herald for the Miami Herald. She joins us here on the Sunshine Economy. Still plenty more to come on the Sunshine Economy, the real deal on real estate in South Florida. This is the Sunshine Economy, the real deal on real estate in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. It's WLRN.org and the conversation at WLRN on Twitter with the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Any real estate market, of course, is built on a steady demand, a steady diet of demand and dollars. And here in South Florida, that means the Venezuelan Bolivar, the Brazilian Real, even the Russian Ruble, and yes, the Euro. But for those who need to borrow money, it means you need to go to a bank. John Canis is the chairman and president of Bank United, and if you would have asked him about the real estate recovery here 6 months ago, he says he would have been skeptical, but no longer.
Frankly, we're beginning to believe in this recovery and its sustainability. We like the way it's building. We like the way that it's building on a cash basis, and we don't see an overzealous group of buyers using too much leverage, mm-hmm. like we saw last time.
But we are seeing and hearing stories anecdotally of homes going for above listing price and having multiple offers in. But you're confident because the offers mostly are cash, not borrowed money. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, they're a combination of cash and people who can qualify for credit under today's terms, which are a lot more stringent than, as you can imagine, than they were 5 or 6 years ago.
Canis says the story of Florida is the story of real estate, and it's a story that's growing for his bank. By the end of this year, he expects the volume of home lending at Bank United to triple compared to just a year ago, half of which he credits to the improving housing market. Banks and their reputations were certainly hit hard when the housing bubble burst. It's much tougher to get a loan today to buy a home compared to the heyday of the housing market. Some, though, have worried that it's too tough, that banks are not doing enough to help the economy. Would you like to see easier loan terms for your customers?
No. I think that while we'd always like to do more business and we'd like to see more loan volume, that we need to continue to temper ourselves. And we have an obligation, I think, as a lending institution, not just to lend money, but to lend money responsibly. And I'd rather see us do less volume and more responsible lending than historically was happening.
You've been a lender and a banker in this market and in lots of different environments for several years. Has that attitude changed, not only for you, but for your colleagues that are in finance?
We've all gotten our fingers burned by getting too carried away with the romance of seemingly unlimited upward markets. And so we've all matured, shall we say, in our thinking with regard to the subject.
Matured, meaning risk is back in the system. A big recession certainly will do that for bankers and home buyers. Some buyers are bypassing banks, though, using cash, while banks are requiring borrowers to put more money down before getting a loan. Long gone are those days of 0% down, no income loans, or even teaser interest rates. While mortgage rates remain at historic lows, qualifying for a loan has gotten much more difficult. Some have complained too difficult. Canis sees banks eager to loosen up lending standards, maybe too eager. Do you think credit is about right here in terms of qualifications?
But what credit is about right now, but it would be easy to make the argument that banks are moving again rapidly in a dangerous direction. Remember that, you know, the net interest margins are very thin today. That's another way of saying we can't charge very much interest for loans.
It's essentially the difference between what you have to pay out in interest for savers and depositors and what you collect
and
based
upon
the loans.
Those margins today in, you know, sort of the average mid-sized bank in the United States are running, you know, low threes. Mm-hmm. And so you call it pay 1% for money and charge 4% for a loan or something like that. That is a significant decline from what the industry is used to. So the consequence of that is that banks are highly motivated today to go out and make loans at a quicker pace than maybe they even should be. And so we are beginning to see banks getting aggressive. I wouldn't say reckless, but we are beginning to see banks get aggressive in interest rate levels and in loosening terms, particularly to commercial borrowers. And but that's simply not a good sign long term, but it is inevitable in a competitive society.
There's also a lot of concern that banks still have a lot of shadow inventory when it comes to housing, either homes that they have foreclosed upon or homes that they hold mortgages that are underwater. The mortgages are more than the homeowner could actually sell the home for. Are banks doing enough to clear out that kind of underbrush in the housing market?
Yes. I mean, obviously, there's still a sizable shadow inventory, but it's remarkable, really, how well that inventory has been drained into the market. And how little impact in some markets it's had in overall price levels.
Some will complain inventories are too low. Have banks held back too much?
I've heard that argument, and possibly in certain markets. I don't think that's true in Florida.
And what about on the short sale side? Essentially, a homeowner working with a bank to try to sell his or her home for less than what they owe. Again, especially in Florida, Foreclosure Central, largest number of foreclosures by any state, Miami, a top 10 city of foreclosures. Have banks been dragging their heels to clear out those short sales and working with the homeowner who's underwater and the buyer that's ready to buy?
Yeah. Well, remember, there's been a lot of intervening circumstances in the last 4 or 5 years. We had the big scandal over foreclosures in the industry, which caused I would argue that it set us back 6 months, perhaps even a year.
This was the robo signing.
Yeah, the robo signing in liquidating this inventory because we were all tied up in massive litigations and investigations by every arm of the government that one could possibly create an acronym for. So that is finally cleared away, and I think we're on the right path right now to clearing this inventory, and it's been tempered in most cases.
Are we seeing the beginning of a new property bubble in South Florida?
I don't see any evidence of that in South Florida. There is evidence of it in some markets across the United States. People talk a lot about Phoenix, Arizona, mm-hmm. As an example, where you read the anecdotal stories of, you know, a house going up for sale and there being 30 bids and finally the house selling for higher than the ask. We have seen some of that in some of these markets, but I think that's spotty, and it is not a general conclusion right now.
Florida's real estate market is famous for its booms and busts, jerking from financial feast to famine. But Canis uses a phrase not often associated with South Florida real estate, self-discipline, to describe today's environment. One of the neighborhoods that has witnessed this whipsaw return is Brickell, just south of downtown Miami. Just a few years ago, thousands of condominiums sat empty, built during the bubble, but never finding buyers. Today, most of them have been snatched up by buyers and investors.
I will say that we're at least impressed, if not amazed, at how quickly this thing has turned around. When I moved onto Brickell Avenue 4 years ago and started trying to find a restaurant that was open on a Friday night to eat in, where there was at least four or five customers, that was a far cry from what we see today. I think I could see 30,000 empty condominium units on Brickell Avenue in 2009. And I mean, if we're to believe the statistics today, which I think are quite accurate, they're all sold. Well, but maybe 1,000 of them.
You used to be able to get a reservation easily on Brickell Avenue on a Friday night. How about now?
Not only could you get a reservation, you were usually alone. When I got here, you could walk into the best restaurant on Brickell at 8 o'clock on a Friday night and take the best table in town. Now, if you're going out on a Wednesday night, you better call a week ahead of time. It's very, very encouraging.
John Canis, chairman and president of Bank United, based in Miami Lakes, calling ahead for his dinner reservation in the middle of the week in Brickell, and hoping that home buyers call ahead for those mortgages. The conversation continues online at WLRN with the hashtag The Sunshine Economy. Are you buying in this market? Are you renting? Are you selling, trying to take advantage of the price increases? Are you underwater on your mortgage? Do you feel more comfortable being a homeowner in South Florida than you have in, say, the past half decade? Join us at WLRN.org and on Twitter at WLRN with the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Still ahead, cultural institutions in our region are becoming real estate developers. It's the Sunshine Economy, the real deal on real estate in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Well, you see them now off of I-95 looking toward the ocean. You can hear the noise filling some of our neighborhoods. Construction cranes dotting our skylines and hammers fixing and building homes. The carpenters, welders, cement workers, architects, designers are becoming busy again. Arguably, real estate is one of the industries that forged our modern South Florida. We drained big swaths of the Everglades, dumped massive amounts of rock and dirt in strategic locations in Biscayne Bay, and created cities and towns. We created our communities. But a community is not just a gathering of buildings. It is not built solely with the glass and steel, concrete block and plywood of our soaring condominium buildings and homes. Sure, those are important drivers of the local economy, but it takes institutions to build a real community. And we're seeing a new era of cultural institutions taking on big real estate projects, building upon their histories, putting construction workers back on the job, investing millions of dollars in public and private donations in real estate, and not expecting a penny of profits in return. One of those is where the MacArthur Causeway leaves the mainland. Two museums are rising here, the Perez Art Museum Miami and the Patricia and Philip Frost Museum of Science. Together, they make up what's called the Miami Museum Park.
It's such a fabulous location. I actually, when I first came to Miami, could not believe that a site like this, which must be one of the prime sites by the waterfront worldwide, I would say, particularly because of our wonderful climate, which makes it a whole year-round location, that I think it's a fabulous opportunity to make this a museum park with the two museums together, sharing a plaza in this whole environment.
Jillian Thomas is the CEO of Miami Science Museum. On this day, she was tucked inside one of those temporary office trailers that crop up on big construction sites. She's been with the museum for 10 years, overseeing the effort that has led to this development. First, it was getting taxpayers to approve $175 million in new bonds to invest in the museum park, answering those who had complained that South Florida lacked the public appetite for big cultural projects.
But I do think that's changing, and that this is a significant moment in creating this downtown heart for the city that will really lay the foundations for the future.
The sound and size may be like a big commercial real estate project, but as design architect Christian Honigschmidt points out, a development designed for the public and to see and experience science in action comes with its unique challenges.
Larger groups of people moving through making this experience exciting. So not only the exhibit or the space itself, but how do you approach the building? How do you move within the building to keep that, along with the exhibits that will go, that will occur along the journey, exciting enough, thrilling enough, so that people want to come back?
From a construction standpoint, definitely a very challenging project. I've done a lot of commercial projects in my career, and I would say this one, above all, is the most complex.
Bob West has seen a lot of buildings go up in South Florida. He's a native Miamian who is the project executive at the Miami Science Museum with Suffolk Construction. One of his concerns was finding enough construction workers. Now he's concerned about keeping the ones he has as building picks up across the region.
You know, because of the downturn, I think a lot of people left the marketplace. So, you know, we were concerned that labor might be a challenge. I think we're more concerned about it from the standpoint of going forward, because more and more work is breaking loose in the South Florida area, in the Miami area in particular.
Back on tour with museum CEO Jillian Thomas, you'd never guess her background is as a chemist, as she's already learned a big lesson of real estate development in South Florida. Bragg.
What is the message that this development sends to the for-profit development community, do you think?
We can do it better.
It's a quieter construction area at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts in Fort Lauderdale, for now, but one that has more than $50 million behind it. The center opened back in 1991. It has since renovated its main theater and has now broken ground for a new building on the shore of the New River. And that's where we spoke with CEO Kelly Shanley.
What you're seeing now are the foundations of the Huizenga Pavilion, which will be right down here on the river, a two-story structure, which will include a ballroom on the top level, and on the lower level, a new bar bistro space. And then it'll empty out onto some dining terraces that'll be injected into the hillside here right on the river.
Key piece of property here in Fort Lauderdale, the Broward Center has had it for a few years. What made you embark upon this real estate development now?
Well, a couple things. First of all, as we got to our 20th anniversary of the building, we knew that we were going to need to make some capital investments in the existing complex. In that process, we also wanted to take some time to sort of look ahead and position ourselves in a way that created a sustainable business model. We started to look at what are those things that we need to offer our patrons that they may be finding in other public assembly facilities or entertainment destinations these days. And given the context that we have here in this beautiful setting on the river in downtown Fort Lauderdale, how can we maximize the value of that for the center and for our patrons? So that led to this component in the design process, and we're really excited about it.
If the vision is able to articulate itself fully, what kind of real estate development is the center in for?
Well, you end up with two pieces of new construction, one being this new pavilion, the other being a new education center on the west side of our building, which will essentially give us a new front on 7th Ave.
Give me an idea of the decision process that led you to this development, because it may be a nonprofit organization, it may be art supporting, but it is still a significant real estate investment that you're making here on this property.
Well, I think any organization or nonprofit institution this size doesn't get too confused about whether or not it's an actual business that needs to create a sustainable model and perhaps exploit the revenues that might be available to it through the assets that it has or through creating additional assets. There are opportunities for us to create earned income revenue streams that could necessarily make us less dependent on contributed income. And so we're always looking for ways to develop those earned income streams and do more for the community. But when you look at the two components that I just mentioned, one of them is clearly aimed at developing revenue streams to sustain the operation. The other one is clearly focused on our mission to serve as an arts and education institution in the community.
Building the future of institutions in South Florida. Still ahead on The Real Deal in Real Estate here on WLRN. Saying goodbye, though, to the big brown building on the bay. The Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. 53 years ago this coming August, a building began rising near downtown Miami on the shore of Biscayne Bay. Now, in short order, this boxy building on the bay became a landmark of sorts. It's withstood hurricanes and political storms, booms and busts for a half century. This week, though, it's empty. The Miami Herald has left the bayside. The newspaper, of course, yes, is still around. But its newsroom and printing presses have moved to Doral. The Herald's owner sold the building to a Malaysian hotel and casino operator, bringing an end to one chapter of the neighborhood and for those who called one Herald Plaza home.
My name is Luisa Janis. I'm a general assignment reporter and also an interactive reporter. And I have been here at the Miami Herald since 2000. However, I have been in this building longer because I began my career here at the Miami News, which was also based in this building. There were two newspapers here. They competed with each other. It was a very exciting building. It's been very emotional for me. I hope I don't break down, but it's a very important building. You know, the building has great character. You walk in and you feel important. You know, important things happen here. When my parents arrived here from Cuba in the late 60s, this is where you came to get your Social Security card. So I remember me and my brother and my parents walking in here and saying, oh, my God, this building, what an important building. We thought it was a federal building or, you know, it was so grand. And went up to the second floor, and there was a special office that if you were a Cuban refugee arriving here during the freedom flights, that's where you got your Social Security card.
Jane Wooldridge, business editor at the Miami Herald, and yes, I've been here 30 years now. I will enormously miss the neighborhood because when we first came here, the neighborhood was already pretty much in decline, and it sort of had crumbled around us, and as it's regenerated, well, it's a terrible time to leave in a way because there's so much great about the neighborhood now, but life goes on.
My name is Sam Jacobs. I first joined the Herald here in 1967. The first time I was ever in this building, I looked out the window and saw the bay, and I couldn't imagine how anybody could ever do any work in this building. But then after a few days, I started ignoring it like everybody else. You know, I keep thinking that, you know, if I'm not careful, my car might come here tomorrow instead of the other place.
Well, Sam, be sure to look for the Palmetto Expressway, not 395. Now, for Sam and anyone, if you find yourself on the bay, you actually see the evolution of South Florida real estate right outside your windshield. I mean, think about it, right? On the south, as you're driving on 395, just to the south, the multi-million-dollar Museum Park development, hoping to become the future of downtown Miami. And just to the north, at least for now, it's that old, now vacant, Miami Herald building. Just 50 years ago, that was the future of real estate in South Florida. On the next Sunshine Economy, our biggest and best-known business, tourism. It began in 1896 when oil baron Henry Flagler stretched his railroad south and built the breakers in Palm Beach. Today, Paul Leone runs the hotel and has to bring in workers from outside Florida.
There are still a lot of entry-level workforce people who think that waiting tables is not necessarily a good job.
Selling Paradise, Tourism in South Florida. That's on the next Sunshine Economy coming up Monday, June 3rd, in 2 weeks, right here on WLRN. Now, we do want to update you on last week's program. The CEO of Mount Sinai Medical Center, Steve Sonnenreich, made this pledge.
You've incentivized us at Mount Sinai this morning. We will post our prices relative to Blue Cross and Aetna, our contractual prices, and we'll challenge Baptist and the other systems in the community to do the same.
The update is he's meeting regularly with his financial administration team to figure out how best and most accurate way to unveil that pricing. The medical center tells us they want to ensure that it's done accurately rather than quickly. Finally, owning a home here is really embedded in what we call the American dream. Having a good job, a decent house, and a nice neighborhood. It's easy to forget, though, with all the ups and downs, the booms and busts of the South Florida housing market, that a home, first and foremost, is not an investment. It's a home. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Sunshine Economy. Thanks for listening.